because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin's summary of this week in the Capitol. J.R., you spent how many hours in the assembly the last?
Not as many as some did, but I was there for a good portion of the debate.
Well, I was asked this last night by a friend. Why is it that members of the assembly, Democrats, chose to prolong the debate for 20 hours? State Senate Democrats, you know, 3 or 4 hours. Mm-hmm. So answer my friend's question. Why 20 hours?
There was a one train of thought that they want to do everything they could to show that we're fighting for our union brothers and sisters on this issue. But it's kind of been, in my experience with the assembly, kind of the track record, if you will. The Senate is more orderly, get to the point, do our 3-4 amendments, and go home. The Assembly Democrats sometimes feel like if you have a longer discussion, you're having a more effective one. I'm not sure others agree with that approach. I mean, as somebody pointed out to me, used to be in media, you always go until 10 o'clock news. Leave 10 o'clock news and get off the floor, because there's no point after that. I mean, now granted, they may have been the lead story of the 5 a.m. and 6 a.m. news this morning, but yeah. At some point, you lose your effectiveness, and that's a kind of a question of this strategy, I suppose.
But the arguments, the profound disagreements, we're going to hear from Assembly Speaker Voss and Democratic Leader Bark in a minute, but the arguments made at 9.01 a.m. Thursday sounded a lot like the ones made at 9.01 a.m. Friday.
Although, interesting, the first arguments made at 11.01 a.m. Thursday were Scott Walker should apologize to
on the resolution.
Employees. Yeah, an interesting strategy, again, because was that what the debate was about? Couldn't you pull that up later on? Shouldn't you have gone right into like your good sound bites at 11 and get them up on the noon news and that kind of? You know, I'm not a strategist for the media, for anybody, any political party, never have been, but you could argue that there are better ways to go about doing things or more effective ways if you want to get a quick sound bite on the news at noon, 5 and 6.
Well, speaking of sound bites, let's listen to how Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Democratic Leader Peter Barca framed the debate. So we're going to hear a clip from the actual
freedom
debate.
Worker choice. That's what this bill is all about. We're going to hear Walker derangement syndrome. We're going to hear all kinds of stuff from this side of the aisle, but don't believe it. Look at the facts. Do your own research. Talk to your own constituents, because in the end, I am positive that when right to work passes, we're going to look back and say this is one of those days when we really made a difference as legislators, standing up for the right decision, even in the face of threats, even in the face of screaming. We're going to do the right thing for Wisconsin. So I urge everyone today, as you listen to this long debate, pay attention, but at the end, I hope you'll vote green. Thank you.
It's against the very value you start off talking about worker freedom, because for generations, what worker freedom meant was the freedom to come home at the end of the night and be safe. What worker freedom meant was the freedom to earn a living wage. What freedom meant was to be able to put food on the table and support your family in dignity. And we know this bill does the opposite.
The emotion behind this, JR, yes, they had to clear the galleries, mm-hmm. but the fourth union rally at noon yesterday only, according to DOA, attracted 300 people, mm-hmm. down from 2,000 yes. earlier. So not any of the same emotional fervor as Act 10?
Well, there are a couple of things that went into that most likely. I mean, one, if you think about it, first off, there's an inevitability, if you will, to this one compared to Act 10.
Yeah.
Act 10, the Democrats in the Senate left the state. It gave a time for the kind of protest to grow, if you will. Also, there was a real question, would they reach a deal? I mean, remember Senators Cullen and Jauk going to meet at a McDonald's in Kenosha,
yes.
or near Kenosha, to talk with Eric Shute, one of the governor's then deputy chief of staff, about what can you guys live with, what can we do to make this work? There is some real question there. Here, the second it passed the Senate, when Fitz said, I've got the votes, we're going to go, that was it. We knew it was going to be done. The question was, would anybody else besides Petrosky, you know, that was it. Petrosky's yeah. going to vote no. That was it. There's no question after that. Then you get into, like, the dynamics of an Act 10. The biggest collection of state public employees in Wisconsin are in Dane County. It's easy to come here after your lunch hour, over your lunch hour, or after your shift and do a turn in the Capitol. These blue-collar guys, these blue-collar hard-hat union guys, they're all over the state. It's much harder to bring them in. Get to the weather. It was 45, 50 degrees that week
yeah.
back then versus... Yeah. bone-chilling cold, and two, the unions have been kind of decimated. There aren't the same resources that there were. 4 years ago. So you add it all together, and you know, conservatives have always been like gleeful in pointing out the diminished turnout now versus 4 years ago. And oh, by the way, when the people are screaming things in the Capitol, the hard hat guys are going, what's going on here?
Yeah,
this is not my crowd.
Well, the governor is going to the Iowa Ag Summit this weekend. He's going to talk about that. And then he's going to sign this right to work bill at, what, 8:30?
Monday morning, 8:45.
In Brown Deer at Badger Meter.
Yes.
And the president of Badger Meter said, if this passes, I'm going to hire, is it 100?
I might bring 30 to 50 jobs here. I mean, they're going to put them in Mexico or here. So it's up to you guys. And oh, by the way, if you don't pass it, I might take 100 jobs or left and move them out too.
Right. Well, the governor makes some major hay on the presidential campaign trail by just now signing right to work or signing it Monday?
Well, what's been fascinating is 6 weeks ago, this is a distraction. Don't do this. Focus on my budget. Now, not only is he saying that we did this.
Yeah.
We brought this up. That was his verbiage in front of the WMC luncheon on Wednesday, I think it was. We brought this up. He's now got a web link on his website for Our American Revival talking about why he's going to sign it, why he's been a years-long supporter of Right to Work. I get the impression, talk to some folks, Republicans, that look, this is a train after a while. It had left the station. Either you get run over or get on board. And Governor Walker's trying to get in the engineer car, if you will, and help lead the train down the track. I mean, it's in some ways a smart politically, right? I mean, he's not going to veto it. How would that look in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina, these primary voters, if he vetoes Right to Work?
Oh, absolutely.
So try and get out in front of the train.
Ability sponsored.
Try and lead it, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And let's be honest. He has been a rather long supporter of the principle of Right to Work. His fear was massive protests, overshadowing his agenda, those kinds of things. But it's a bit much more dynamic than it was last time.
Meanwhile, new subject. Joint Finance began to do its agency budget briefings. And I was so intrigued. The Department of Transportation, Secretary Gottlieb came up. And you heard the first bargaining offer from John Nygren, the co-chair. Mr. Secretary, I've asked you to develop a list. If the governor's proposed bonding of 1.3 is cut back by $500 million to $800 million. What projects would we lose? And boy, did Gottlieb say, yeah, he came up with a rather impressive list. Mm-hmm. And it's a list in all regions of Wisconsin. And it's a list that would bite quite a few members of the Joint Finance Committee. So how serious do you think Nygren is about offering to shave $500 million off of the 1.3 billion?
Well, I think they're awfully serious, but how do they get there is the question. Like we've talked before, those May revenue re-estimates, if they are warranted, might they provide some flexibility to pull some money around and do some things? K-12 is still number one, from what I can tell, in terms of priorities. UW, too, and bonding third, especially with roads, that might offer you some flexibility. Might they find a... There's little bits and pieces of money always in the budget, you know. Yeah. 15 million GPR here, 50 here, 30 there. Start to pull it together after a while and help in some regard. So that might be an option. But, you know, will they actually say, okay, delay my project? That's the big rub, you know. So how do you find otherwise? You got to find more money or find somewhere else to save money inside of the DOT budget. Where do you find it? Or, you know, I mean, Howard Markline, freshman senator on Joint Finance, said, okay, well, of the gas tax, how much that's paid for by out-of-state folks? You know, kind of an opening line of, hey, the gas tax is a viable option because it's not just us paying it, as opposed to registration fees or the kinds of things.
So but Gottlieb's answer was, we only think 20% of it, diesel fuel, is sold. And he said, we don't know what it is for the domestic. Right, but let's talk about the gas tax. You know, the Fiscal Bureau said, had we not stopped indexing in 2006, we would have collected, let me check the number, an additional $968 million. However, the other side of that, Fiscal Bureau says, we'd have a gas tax of 37.4 cents per gallon, one of the highest in the nation. Meanwhile, Senator Fitzgerald said, no gas tax on my watch.
Absolutely.
Fair read?
Yeah, they're not going to do it. Here's the other thing. Right now, when gas is going up to $2.40 a gallon, we're like, hey, that's not that bad. Not a big deal. When it was $4 a gallon, summer of 2008, was that? Seven? That's when you would have really felt another pressure. So, I mean, yes, they did it away that 10 years ago. I think it would have happened eventually because of the pressures on those things, especially talk radio being a big, huge force, Republican Party really pushing for that back then. But they just, I don't see a way they can go back into it right now and make an argument straight face of, well, we didn't really raise your taxes because we cut them somewhere else. I mean, it's going to be a tax increase. And if you're a Republican right now, a lot of these districts, you worry about a primary. You don't worry about general elections. So that would be a problem for you in a primary to raise a gas tax.
Joint Finance members were also intrigued to hear DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp say, We want to make the parks self-supporting, so there's no GPR, no general fund revenue in there. Mm-hmm. Then nothing is off the table, except at one point she said, we're not going to sell the parks. But it was news to joint finance members that they're seriously considering business sponsorships and naming rights to state parks. Can you see Trek Devil's Lake State Park in our future, JR?
Well, I got the impression that what they're trying to get at in DNR was that they're looking for ways to have corporate partners, if you will, like with concession stands, like have the private sector run certain functions of state parks. I don't think that Kathy Stepp really was embracing, like, yes, we want to name these parks after corporations, mm-hmm. but if you don't close the door, it gives the opponents the opportunity to, like, well, what about this? What about that? And so in that regard, it did seem like she kind of left some gray area, if you will, and the Democrats seized it. Well, what about this? What are you guys doing? These are state parks. These are right. pristine parts of the state. These are things we should protect and enhance, not be selling away, you know, to the Koch Brothers State Park. Can you imagine that? Oh, my. So, I mean.
Kind of like Lena Taylor on Reggie Newsom, DWD secretary. Are we going to drug test for alcohol, methamphetamines? Are we going to drug test veterans? He didn't have any answers saying the federal government hasn't issued any guidelines. But I'm sorry, back to parks.
I mean, it's an interesting, well, there's a theme there a little bit of not having answers to these questions. And so all the drug tests they talked about across several agencies was, well, what about this? What about, and Lena's point was, well, what about opiates? I mean, prescription drugs are as big a problem, not bigger problem, than marijuana and anything else. Why don't you test for those? Eloise Anderson from Children and Families said, companies test for these drugs. I have to have a clean bill of health for them to get a job.
Yep.
That's what we're going to test for.
Right.
That was the most succinct and direct answer to the drug testing question we got from anybody in the hearings. Otherwise, it was, we don't know. We're waiting for the feds.
Well, at one point, Newsom called it a placeholder in the mm-hmm. budget, a curious term for a governor's budget. But anyway, back
well,
to
what about Kitty Rhodes saying, I can't tell you.
Okay.
We need the permission to build it. So I'm going to give you a blank check to go do this, and then you'll just trust me. That's a hard sell for Democrats, number one. Republicans were less worried about that because they do trust Governor Walker's administration. They do believe in the philosophy they want to do. But yeah, it's kind of a hard sell to lawmakers to say, unless you have some kind of check with joint finance, they come back to us in 6 months for final approval, just say, okay, it's your baby. Go ahead and deal with it.
Well, let's circle back to DNR. Do you think, was Stepp embarrassed when she told them, I was not consulted in the decision that would make the DNR board, which now sets major policies, into an advisory panel? She said, I was not part of those meetings. Embarrassing?
Can't speak for her, but she's a former DNR board member.
Yes.
Has to say that, defend, saying, yes, it should be advisory because we want to do things a different way, much different than her comments a few years ago about the DNR board and how important it was. But it is a culture shock, if you will, for Wisconsin to go from what we're used to doing to what Governor Walker wants to do.
Yep.
It also consolidates power, let's be honest, in the executive branch to
Absolutely.
Do things. You know, now, you can make the argument of why does a board that's not elected make rules? Why shouldn't lawmakers make rules? They're, you know, accountable. Those kinds of things. So it's a different culture, a different mindset for government than what we're used to.
One more controversy that I'm going to raise my hand and confess I didn't see coming. The governor writes an op-ed piece in the Weekly Standard saying he would look forward to signing a ban on abortion after 20 weeks. Where'd that come from, my friend?
A couple of things. One, remember last year during the election, Governor Walker ran an ad that his fans was pretty effective, saying ultimately the bill that I supported, which was the one about ultrasounds and regulations for clinics that do perform abortions, you know, right. admitting privileges, said ultimately the bill leaves it to a choice between a woman and her doctor,
right.
which was a good way for him to straddle that issue at a time when he was tied in the polls with Mary Burke. That's not a good message with evangelical voters in Iowa. Then he goes on Fox News on Sunday and gives kind of a wishy-washy answer about, you know, kind of a bad question from Mike Wallace, would you change that law? Well, it's not a law, it's a Supreme Court decision, number one.
Yeah, Roe versus Wade.
But still, Governor Walker kind of fumbled a little bit. So getting blowback from anti-abortion activists, he comes out strongly in favor of, I will sign a ban on abortion after 20 weeks. Now here's the thing. In the 4+ years I've covered Governor Walker as governor, I have never once heard him say, I will sign a bill sight unseen.
Yes.
Not once.
It's always, I will wait until it gets to my desk.
Yes.
Excuse me.
If it gets to my desk sometimes.
Yes, if.
So that was unusual. Two, the bill hasn't been introduced. In this legislature. It hasn't been a priority so far. Is he calling for this? Does he want this to happen before Iowa and New Hampshire happen in a year? good questions. But he's definitely laying down a marker of, this is my position, I would sign this. And by the way, the polling nationally shows that it's not a terribly unpopular idea with the general public to ban abortion after 20 weeks. And that's a fairly, I think 50%+ question.
Yeah.
It's not like that crazy. But it's also this example of Governor Walker who campaigns one way and now is shifting course to be a different direction of, I'm much more rigid in my language right now than I was when I was running in a purple state a few months ago.
Can you and I agree on that two issues, right to work and banning abortions after 20 weeks, were not central issues in the last campaign for governor,
my friend?
Oh, absolutely
not. They weren't at all. It's all about the economy,
right?
Creating jobs and turning the economy around.
Right. And this week I had a chance to interview Senate President Mary Lozick, who said, I will be the lead sponsor on the bill banning abortions after 20 weeks in the Senate. And let's listen to specifically her reasons for offering it. It has to do with the ability of the fetus to feel pain. So let's listen to Senator Lozick.
I was very pleased to hear the governor's comments that he's interested in that bill. And that bill is all about pain. We look at the science, and it's the pain inflicted on the child. Way back to Roe v. Wade, the science, the technology, the information just wasn't available. And were that information available today, would there be a different decision? I tend to think there would be a different decision. You argue too much with the hard science, and that makes a huge difference. So it's all about inflicting pain on someone. That's what that bill is about.
How many controversial firestorms can Republicans launch in the next 6 months, and can they put them all out? But maybe a better question, what's the next issue that people like us should be looking for that has the emotion of right to work and banning abortion?
Well, I don't know if that's emotion, but prevailing wage is one that Fitzgerald's talked about. He said bluntly, I don't know, I had the votes in my caucus yet, they're not yet there, but he is selling it as a way to lower costs on public projects. There are 40-plus sponsors of that bill in the Assembly right now, so there's probably enough
that's
support
coming
to pass that.
You hear that train.
Oh, so that's one. The abortion would probably be a big one. It's hard to predict what the big controversy is going to be, but you have to give Republicans credit that in the last 4 years, they have remade Wisconsin government and policy in their image. They really have. I mean,
they truly have.
Been
a Republican revolution.
Governor Walker talks about how property taxes are lower now than when he took office. All these things they've done. Right to work now is almost done. They call it tort reform. They've done tax cuts. They've done all these
the
things.
Rules go through the governor's office. Reapportionment, on and on and on and on.
And now here's one question, though.
Photo ID, go ahead.
Yeah, Voss and Fitzgerald, okay. If this doesn't work, what else do you have? Because, I mean, let's be honest. They have passed their agenda and then some in terms of getting the economy going. We still lag. Now, there are lots of positive indicators. We're down to 5% unemployment. All these good things happening. But there's good stuff happening everywhere in the country right now. We're still kind of middle of the pack or lower third, somewhere around there, for job growth. What might leapfrog us up, if you will? If this doesn't do it, what else is there left?
Right. One thing that broke after we taped the last rewind, Gogebic Taconite announced that they're not going to do the mine in Ashland and Iron Counties. 1,000-foot mine, 4 mile long, potential development costs $1.5 billion. I'm struck, JR, the history of that. Dale Schultz blocked it. So then Gudex gets elected, and votes for it. And then documents last year disclosed that the year that Walker was fighting to survive a recall, Gogebic $700K to the GOP campaigns. That's one of the toughest areas economically in Wisconsin. Were you surprised that Gogebic pulled the plug?
The prediction was when this bill passed that either A, they'd have problems with wetlands, or B, the tribes would sue in federal court and undercut the entire project. And so even if they hadn't pulled the plug, I'm fairly confident that a suit from the tribe up there would have tied it up for years and years and years. And oh, by the way, the price of iron ore has dropped the last few years. I mean, at some point, there were too many things against that project to make it work. So, it's not a surprise they pulled the plug, it's just that they did it now. Think about it, they've been exploring for a year and a half.
They did borings, yes, for 12, 18 months.
And said, okay, no go. And, the other thing they said was the EPA is too difficult to work with right now. Now, maybe if there was a different president, different administration, it'd be different. But, again, still, the tribes have a grounds for a lot of lawsuit. And a lot of folks I talked to thought they'd have a good chance of winning.
I was also struck by the elected officials, the ones who pushed it with such fervor, greeted this announcement by Gogebic with, you know, kind of a collective shrug, okay, let's move on.
Or it's the federal government's fault. You know, they should be more easy to work with.
That was the two-sentence statement that that Laurel Walker issued for Governor Walker. It's a shame of the EPA. Well, anyway. Okay, final subject. I haven't had a lot of chance to do this, but I know you're on it like a hawk. Did Governor Walker's presidential campaign have a good or bad week?
Good question. No real gaffes this week. No crazy comments that like have sparked a new round of is he ready or isn't he ready. But one thing that was interesting this week was this debate in some national media about how impressive are Walker's three wins in Wisconsin, a purple state.
Yes.
So on the one hand, he's won three times in a purple state in 4 years. On the other, he won those three times in off-year elections. So you give Walker credit. He's won by comfortable margins all three times, twice in a wave, once in a unique election where there are some segment of the population that said, we don't like his policies, but we don't like the recall. Yeah. So put that aside, though. If you look back in Wisconsin history in off-year elections, which is when he's mostly run, only one Democrat has won the governor's race in 30 years in Wisconsin, Jim Doyle.
Jim Doyle.
Only two other Democrats have won statewide in off-years in the last 30 years, Herb Kohl and Russ Feingold.
Russ Feingold.
That's it.
Those are three Democrats that have won statewide office over those decades.
Now, you know, and you know, we got to look at him too. I mean, Tommy Thompson was governor for a long period of that. You know, it's hard to be an incumbent, right? Doyle beat Scott McCallum, who was kind of a weak incumbent at the time, a three-way race that was kind of dicey at the end. But Wisconsin's a different place in an off-year election than is in a presidential election. So 3 million people come November next year might be a different environment for Scott Walker if he were on the ticket than 2.5 million this last November. At the same time, if you're a Republican, you're going, look, we got 2.5 million people out, and we still won by 4.5 points. Okay. That's pretty good still, if you think about it, because the argument always been what? The higher turnout is in Wisconsin, the better it's for Democrats. Well, if you're a Democrat, you go, we got 2.5, we couldn't beat him.
Right.
So 2.1 is one thing, 2.5 is another. So could he win 3 million? Maybe.
But one of the critical stories is this in the New York Times. Scott Walker's electoral record is less impressive than it looks. So he is picking up a lot more national notice and criticism.
538, the blog, did a counterpoint about, yes, it is impressive, you know, to look at it. But what it's comparing is, how did Walker do compared to Romney, and is there any correlation there? And again, I think the national media may be missing that we're a different state off-year versus presidential. You're not seeing that connection of what we've been like historically.
Well, one other question about this. I truly don't understand why Our American Revival, which is the governor's presidential PAC, would issue a statement getting into Hillary Clinton's emails. Help me understand that.
A good question. It opened the door to like getting a shot about Governor Walker and the secret email system that his aides were using when he was county executive. I mean, it was almost like a softball for Democrats. At the same time, you saw a headline in Politico this week about the awkward silence for Republicans. They weren't like nailing this thing. And for Republican primary voters, my guess is that those folks, if you say, well, Governor Walker had a secret email system, just liberal media, Democratic, DA, don't worry about that. Walker's audience right now are Republican primary voters, conservative primary voters. If you look at the polls too, he's doing really, really well with conservatives. They are his base right now nationally. He's going after them. So maybe they thought, hey, those guys are going to really want a knock on Hillary Clinton right now.
Okay.
But it does open the door to, oh, by the way, Governor, remember like 6-8 years ago?
Yep. Finally, let's look ahead a little bit. Joint Finance has set 4 public hearings, Rice Lake, Brilliant, Alverno College. Is that where the action is going to be over the next few weeks?
Well, action in terms of like endure, like listen to public.
Yeah. Are the Senate and the Assembly going to be in session? No, they're not.
No, they come back. I think that week of one of the weeks that they're doing public hearings will be somebody will be in that week. But there's not much heavy lifting right now being done. It's set the stage for the budget, start voting in April on that thing, and go through it line by line, go from there.
Unless in April somebody like Mary Lozick moves an abortion ban after 20 weeks.
Well, the thing about the timing of that bill is, remember, the people in the legislature right now have to run for election in 2016. I was always told the closer you get to the end of the session in March of the even-numbered year, the harder those bills are to do. So does it make sense to do it in May, June, maybe come back in the fall session and do it? Because it might be tougher in February and March next year because voters have it fresh in their mind a little bit before the November election. That's one thing to watch is the timing of it.
Well,
you
talk about re-elects. One final question. Are you surprised that the freshmen who had the tightest races, the Novaks and the Heatons and the Quinns, all voted for right to work? Because there was some wonder whether they would.
Well, if you look at the Republicans and what they're talking about, they say, look, our polling shows it's a popular issue. So they're saying it's not a big deal. I don't know those guys have a huge blue-collar union presence in their districts. That's one thing I'm not quite sure about. So might it come back to bite them, like a Rick Gudex, for example, who has big contractors in his district, won by 600 votes 3 years ago, might be more of an issue than for those guys. I don't know yet. But the argument that Voss made was, look, I had a couple guys who were on the fence, and then they kept talking and talking and talking, and said, okay, we're on board, let's go. And in the end, he got all the votes in his caucus.
Okay, no WisPolitics stock report, because there's too many people rising, mixed, falling today?
Too much to do this week to that. So we'll be back next week, I promise.
I understand. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for March 6th.